want to know how to find it. Seek it out when they hide it. You know it's in the bag when it's an easy grab. But come on, take a chance now. So go, 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 geocache, geocache. And if you need help, we're right there in a flash. If you got a question, just call in and ask. Uncover the stash on the Geocaching Podcast. The Geocaching Podcast.
Welcome to episode 158, June Cacher Copy of the Geocaching Podcast, recorded live on June 8th, 2010. I'm your host, XPunkX, with
Daryl W4 and
Monty Ryder.
If you want to participate in our show today, please call 724-444-7444. Our TalkCast ID is 7525. You can join our live chat room to participate with other listeners, and that can be found at geocachingpodcast.com/live. Click the Join Now to participate. Our voicemail line is 206-3503-GPS, and we're on Twitter at twitter.com/GCPodcast. This episode is sponsored by Cache Advance. See cache-advance for any caching needs that you have. Well, Monty and Daryl, welcome back. It's been a couple weeks since we didn't do a live show last week, so it's really been itching. I've been really itching to get back to this live format. It's just not the same when we record pre-recorded and then put one out. It's so much better when we do it live.
Absolutely.
You have to agree there.
Yeah, it's nice to just get the stuff out for everyone, but it's so much more fun when we can get the live interaction.
Oh, definitely. So, Monty, how have you been?
Pretty good. Unfortunately, the temps here in Florida are already getting up to where it's not as comfortable to go out caching unless it's a very short hike from the car. Temps here are already starting to get very close to the triple-digit mark. What I've been doing instead is simply getting the supplies together for our July meet-and-greet event for Daryl and Dree when they come down here on July 18. And I've also had some time to get used to the new camera that I got. I told everybody about a couple weeks ago. Sunday, our church started its usual summer softball league, and this year they appointed me as the photographer. We had two games Sunday, and I shot off over 1,300 frames and still had room on the memory card. Shot total about 7.4 gigs.
Well, that's a great thing about being digital now is that you have all of that shooting and you've never had to go and change a card or a roll of film or anything. You know, remember when we had to shoot film and you only got 24 or 36 frames?
Oh yeah, those were the days.
Man, yeah, I just love digital for so many reasons, and that's one. But myself, my week was just pretty much working on Cachemaniacs. Did manage to get three finds in on Sunday while running around and doing some errands. So, at least I got a little bit of caching in. Andy?
Yeah, I actually got a little bit of caching in too. Like I said, we didn't do any live show last week. And the reason for that was because I was in Chicago doing some training. And so when we went to the House of Blues on Tuesday night, and then after that, I went out and found a cache. It was about 11:30 p.m. when I decided to go out and find this cache. We were right downtown Chicago. So I went out, found this cache, came back in, and the guy I was staying with was, he knew I'm a cacher, so I've already told him about that, but he kind of looked at me like, you're crazy, it's 11:30, why are you going out into the city to find some stupid little thing? But hey, that's just life. So, and then besides that, our boys are at their grandma and grandpa's house this week, so we're just trying to get some things done around the house, do some cleaning up, things that we don't normally get to do while they're here, because it's so crazy around our house sometimes. So anyways, it's been kind of fun, and hit one cache tonight also before the show. So I'm itching and itching more and more for our cache run that we're doing this summer. But until then, I just got to do these onesies and twosies.
Learn to take and use photos for geocachers. It's time for Photography for Cachers.
Of course, the technical end of photography is only a small part of getting a good photo. Let's take a look at some general tips in composing your portraits, and yes, even self-portraits. Position people between the camera and the subject. Focus on the people. Put the people at the side. Wide aperture, lower numbers, for separation, or narrow, higher numbers, for depth. The best way to move from the tour-style snapshots is by separating the people in your photo from the background. I prefer to set up my photo of the background to create a good image of just that, then add my people closer to the camera, making them as prominent as the primary object I'm capturing in the background. Generally, you'll want to get your people from waist up, allowing them to be larger in the frame. It also looks best to have them off to either the left or right side of the frame, rather than in the center. To focus on them with many cameras, you can use a technique usually called the half press. Move the camera so the people are in the center, press the shutter halfway to focus, then without releasing the button, recompose, then press the button all the way down. Work on these tips, and before long you'll see a difference in your photos, and we'll work on the aperture later. Just a reminder that this Saturday is a geocaching 12-12. Haul your camera out and grab a dozen shots to tell the story of your day of geocaching, then share them over at geocaching1212.com.
The Hollywood Greek Reporter wrote about a new movie titled Geocachers, starring Christos Vassilopoulos. This story features two couples camping in the woods who run into a team of villains on the hunt for the loot from a botched heist. The campers are forced to help the thieves under the threat of being killed after one of the campers is kidnapped. No information on when the shooting will begin or a release date, but we'll link to the article on the Hollywood Greek Reporter's website in our show notes.
Garmin officially announced the much-expected GPS Map 62 series last Wednesday. The GPS Map 62 series looks much like the GPS Map 60 series, but slightly taller, deeper, and heavier. It also boasts a 2.6-inch transflective color LCD at 160 by 240 pixels. The 62S and the 62ST have a 3-axis compass, barometric pressure, micro SD card slot, and Garmin's wireless support. The new GPS Map 62ST includes 100K topo maps for the US version or 50K topo maps for the Canadian version. All 62 series units will support Birdseye, Garmin Connect, Garmin Custom Maps, and paperless geocaching. The base model 62 will be under $350, the 62S will be about $450, and the 62ST will be about $550. We'll link to that release in the product pages in our show notes.
Groundspeak pumped out another update to the geocaching.com website last Wednesday. This included the anticipated update of the Lost and Found site and a virtual trackables collection. Other notable features are automated username changes, Facebook like for geocaches, an event booth page to search for caches near you, and added the ability to virtually collect trackables and replace the descriptive text for logs with mini icons. Some bug fixes include 10-year events missing from pocket queries, image uploads to benchmarks, and they also added a checkmark to the cache pages for found caches, and the addition of the map it link to the pocket query results. We will link to the release notes in our show notes.
Another update to the Android version of CacheMate made its way out of Smittyware last week. Version 1.3.5 added a couple of features and fixed a few others. Check our show notes for a link to their change log.
Geocaching with Geosphere for the iPhone and iPod Touch also received an update last week. Version 2.2.1 is mostly bug fixes, but did include one new feature. We'll have a link to those release notes in our show notes.
Groundspeak officially stated in their newsletter last week that their Lost and Found event, GC24GYW, and the headquarters cache will each have their own icon. We'll link to the article on Groundspeak's Latitude 47 blog with the information in our show notes.
Geocaching question of the day. The Bad Cop asks, you answer.
Hello, this is The Bad Cop, and welcome to the geocaching question of the day. Each weekday, I ask my Twitter audience a geocaching-related question and then summarize the replies and post it on my website. I hope this little project will keep you up to date on the ever-changing face of geocaching. The geocacher Sparrows Gold wants to know, do you plan on attending Geo Woodstock 8 this year? 45% of those that replied say they are planning on attending Geo Woodstock this year. So tell me, do you plan on attending Geo Woodstock this year? Want to find out all this and more? Come to my website, cachingnw.com, and follow me, The Bad Cop, on Twitter.
Listener feedback.
Hey, X-Punk X, this is WV Angler. I'm calling in an official muggle experience I had today. Went on a quick caching run, stopped at a cemetery, Walked out, made a quick find, went back to my car, drove to the next site, which was about 0.3 of a mile away or so, the next geocaching site, pulled in and was getting ready to get out of the vehicle, had my information there. I was reviewing the cache description, everything. I looked up my rearview mirror, and there were blue lights. So I waited, and the officer came up and asked me for my insurance and registration. I thought maybe I was speeding or something going up to that site, and so I didn't mention anything. And he told me that my tags were expired, and also asked me what I was doing in that cemetery, just back up the road. And not really understanding why he asked me what I was doing in the cemetery, I explained to him that, well, I just said, you know, I was visiting the cemetery. Well, he came back then with a second officer, and they asked me to step out of the vehicle, brought me back and patted me down, and wanted more information about what I was doing in the cemetery, and which I was happy to give. I wasn't intentionally trying to be conceal any of my information, tell them I was geocaching or anything. It just never occurred to me to tell them that, which was my mistake. And the other people should make sure they always tell officers right up front that they were geocaching, just so that they don't know, in case they think that you're doing something else suspicious, which in this case they did, because it turned out that this cemetery is kind of a drug hotspot, and which should have been a little bit of an indicator on one of the cache descriptions that it said that the police patrol this area heavily at night, don't do this cache in the nighttime. That should have been a tip to me. And it's probably not the best place to even hide caches if this is the case, which I will let the cache owners know, but it's up to them. Anyhow, they did a search in my vehicle, and while they were searching my vehicle, they came across information I had printed out on geocaching, such as the little bifold Geocacher University Muggle cards that you can get from their website. And I also had some other information in the car that I'd been gathering, some printouts and things on geocaching that I was going to present to my local Chamber of Commerce for a geotrail that we're trying to get going in our area. And so as soon as they found all this paraphernalia on geocaching in the car, they called off the search immediately and said, he's fine, he's cool. And they just told me to have fun and be on my way. So that was my two tips would be to always be up front. And, you know, you guys have mentioned that before, but another tip would be to have printouts and muggle cards and things like that with you on your person so that you can give that to officers in case they've never heard of the game, and so it doesn't sound suspicious to them. And maybe that'll get you out of a sticky situation like it did me. Take care.
Thank you, WV Angler, for calling in that feedback. Again, it is a good reminder, like he said, to always be up front, especially with the official muggles, but also to have something printed out so that way you can kind of hand them so it looks a little bit more than just something you made up. If you've got voicemail feedback that you'd like to send to us, give us a call at 206-350-3GPS. Now, tonight is our June Cacher Coffee. What that is it's kind of like a time if you were just sitting around having some coffee with some friends at a caching or at a coffee house, kind of bring up any kind of topic you want. We have a few topics here that we were going to talk about. So if you've got anything you want to put in tonight, please call our live line at 724-444-7444. And again, our TalkCast ID is 7525. If you're on the phone, go ahead and press *8 to get in our queue to talk. Well, I think the first thing I want to talk about tonight is Wood Mike brought up a good question here on Twitter. He tweeted us and said, does anyone else object to having a Facebook like button on their cache page without any way to opt in or opt out of the Facebook like page? And he said he's actually disabling all of his caches right now until he can go ahead and get that taken care of. Now, Daryl Montu, do you guys have any feedback on that? I mean, I know for me, I don't necessarily mind the having that like Facebook like page. It's not really it doesn't really do a whole lot. I mean, yeah, there are people that don't use Facebook and don't log in, but if you're not using Facebook, you're not going to be able to use the like button anyways. And it doesn't really do a whole lot except for interact with the people that you have on your Facebook. So like, if I say that I liked it, no one else on my cache page is going to see that I liked that thing. Only people who are going to see it is people that are my friends. I think it's not a bad idea, but again, maybe there should be a way to kind of opt out of that. What do you guys think?
Well, on that, I'm not sure on that one yet. I've heard some reports where Facebook is having a security issue with that like button. I'm really not sure. Facebook's not really too much of a site that I'm into, at least not at this point.
I'm not a fan of Facebook, as anyone who listened to the last Cachers of the Roundtable will certainly know. And therefore, you know, I've deleted my Facebook account, so it doesn't really affect me much. I just kind of, I'm just kind of disappointed that Groundspeak went this route. You know, I understand why they did that, but I was really hoping to see something that's more of a community ranking system, you know, something, you know, even as simple as this is a good cache, yes, no, and then get, you know, 25% of these finders found it to be a good cache. You know, that makes some sense to me, but this Facebook like, it doesn't make sense to me at all. But again, I'm not really someone who likes the Facebook community concept so much. You know, I'm more of a Twitter user and like that kind of style. I'm just not really a Facebook type of person.
And Bad Cop says that it puts the Facebook, puts it in your Facebook name, not your caching name on the listing page. So even then, unless my name is the caching name, you're not really going to know who it is. I mean, I don't know. To me, it's one of those things that they probably could have left out. It kind of clutters the cache page. You know, what are we going to have next? Share this on Twitter? It just seems like there's too much. Socially is a good thing as far as if you find the cache, letting people know that you found the cache on Twitter or / Facebook. But as far as liking it on Facebook, I don't really know that I like that idea. It's not something that I really like.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the, like concept as, you know, the Facebook thing and, you know, whatnot would be. You know, what I was really looking for is more some kind of ranking system so that we could say in a pocket query, for instance, show me only the caches that 50% of the people or more liked. You know, something to give it some kind of rating so you knew what the community thought about it, not, you know, just announcing to the friends and family that you like that cache.
Well, and I think it holds more weight, too, if it's your caching community overall as a general, like 70% of the finders, as opposed to, you know, Andy Lehman liked this cache. And again, it doesn't even show if you're not friends with me, you're not going to see that I even like the cache. So is it useful? Is it okay? I don't really think so. But again, to each its own. If you've got something else that you want to put in, if you've got another reason why it would be a good thing for the Facebook like, feel free to give us a call, 206-350-3GPS, and leave us a voicemail. If you're on the call with us tonight, 724-444-7444, and our Talkcast ID is 7525. Now, Daryl, we talked a little bit about this new Hollywood movie coming out. From what I've seen, and I've only seen the one, I think it was the Found It cache, the Found It movie, I don't know if they did an all right job portraying geocachers, and I haven't got a chance to see the Splinterheads or this new movie, obviously, that's not made yet. But what do you guys think about this? Are we being portrayed? Is it a good thing? I mean, I know especially it seems like on all the books that are coming out and in the movies, there's always some sort of a murder mystery that's involved in geocaching. And I don't know about you, but I've never, ever been involved with a murder mystery when I'm geocaching. I mean, there may be in a puzzle, but never as far as a real thing. Are we being portrayed correctly here in Hollywood?
Well, I'm not sure it's even a matter of necessarily being portrayed correctly, because in many cases, it's not so much about the geocachers getting into the criminal activities, but rather the geocachers discovering them. And in that case, yeah, it's probably accurate, because we had at one of the caches about 2 years ago now, I think, they had found a body. You know, not geocachers, but someone else had found a body about 200-300 feet from the cache. And then we had another murder that was a big international story that they spread the woman out throughout this park that we actually go caching in. So, you know, yeah, I can see that part of it. But why is it that just about all of these stories seem to involve some kind of criminal activity with the geocachers. Either they're, you know, involved in the criminal activity or they just discover it. Really, Splinterheads is the only one that comes to mind where there's no criminal activity involved. It was just, you know, part of the plot to get the main characters to, you know, spend some time together.
Well, and like I said, you know, I guess maybe in your area, you're going to have a whole lot more. We've not heard here in our area where there's geocaches and near or bodies near geocaches. But again, it makes sense because, you know, if you're out in the woods and places that you're going to find a good geocache at, there's definitely going to be probably a good chance of a good place to hide a body or a meth lab. And so there's, you know, I've read a couple, one of the books, and I've seen one movie. I guess we're being portrayed okay. And I think too that, for one thing, it's interesting to see the people who produce these movies. When they get an idea to produce the movie, usually they become avid geocachers after they start producing this movie. You know, they would do some research into it. And so it's usually pretty good. Again, it's just interesting to me that it's all usually the murder mystery kind of things that make geocaching movies. But I guess it makes sense because they're, you know, it's an interesting thing. We can hide things and people, I guess, want to hide a body. And so I guess, you know, that it seems like an obvious thing kind of to marry into a topic to create a movie.
Yeah, I just worry though about the whole thing of, we're out there, we're doing the great hiding spots for our, you know, perfectly valid game. But there are people who aren't looking for, you know, legal things, and they want to hide them too. And we've already got those good spots, and they're going to use them as well. But that kind of thought, I'm afraid, might be, you know, putting some of the potential geocachers off. And also, indirectly, it gives the geocachers that, something's not quite right with geocachers' mantle. And, you know, that's what really kind of bothers me about the portrayal that we've seen so far. You know, I'm not sure that there's any way that, you know, you could work geocaching into any normal story without it being just, you know, extra fluff. But, you know, the attachment to the criminals is what really kind of makes me stop and think, you know, maybe something ain't right here.
Well, and, you know, we already have a pretty good, not good track record with having a, you know, being a bad game, you know, where as far as we always have our bombs, our caches blown up because they think that they're bombs. So is it a good thing that we have all these movies and get people out there? Yeah, because it's going to have more people knowing about geocaching, more people will be aware of it. But on the same time, is it going to give them the bad and the wrong idea too?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we talked about that new 62 series GPS, and one of the things that a number of people have mentioned is that we're going back to buttons and there's no touchscreen anymore. So I thought it was maybe worth talking about buttons versus a touchscreen again. And Andy and I both are from colder climates. But Andy, have you had a chance to really work with any of the touchscreens in the winter?
Not as far as the GPS goes. You know, I've got my iPod that I use in the winter. And I know that, I mean, I don't use it a whole lot because I don't do a whole lot of caching in the winter. Usually when I do, I'm back in the van when I do the logging with it. So it's not like I'm actually trying to manipulate it when I'm out in the cold. But, you know, I've honestly have never had my hands yet on, well, I've never used it out in the field, a buttonless GPS. I've only had GPSs that have buttons. So I can't really speak of cold weather and whether that's works or not.
Yeah. And, you know, that's one of the nice things though, is about the buttons is that when you've got the gloves on, it's just easier to manipulate usually than a touchscreen is. You know, you can get the special gloves and whatnot to make all those touchscreens work. And there's definite advantages to each, you know, not having all of those buttons makes it a little easier to seal it up. But at the same time, without the buttons to feel, if you're manipulating the controls in less than great visibility, like with a big mitten or whatever covering the screen as you try to tap it.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice to have the buttons on there, but it's also nice to have the touch screens. Really, I think it comes down to mostly preference. And if you're a PDA smartphone type of user, chances are you're going to want the touch screens. But for most people, I think the buttons are actually going to be preferable.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it makes the GPS a little bit bigger. But for me, I'm okay with that. I do like my iPod Touch, but again, I've not tried it out in the winter.
Well, and one of the things that I like about the buttons is you have that built-in handle. And one of my problems with using most of the touchscreen is I'm pressing on the screen and blocking the screen. So especially on the smaller touchscreens, it kind of makes it unfortunate to try to use because you're blocking out parts and you're hitting the wrong buttons accidentally. Yeah, it's really nice to have those buttons as a tactile feedback too.
That is true, and there's no, you know, I know BlackBerry had tried with their Storm to make it so that the actual screen pushes down when you push the keys, the virtual keys. But even then, I didn't really like that. It still felt weird that you're touching a virtual key, but the whole screen went down. So even though it had that kind of a push feel to it, it didn't feel right to me.
Yeah, definitely. And they got rid of that for the Storm 2. And I think they actually went with some kind of vibrate now when you press a button. But the Storm's keyboard was also nowhere near as nice to use as the Android or the iPhone.
That is true. Hey, now, one of the things I think that we've been looking for a long time, at least, you know, those of us who collect trackables, I know that Dree has quite a few trackables. And so I know that we've been looking for a way to keep those out of our inventory because we don't want to have an active trackable. We want the icon, but we don't want to keep them in our active inventory. So what a lot of us have been doing is actually going and creating a cache that we uncheck this cache is ready for review. And so it always just sits in kind of a limbo stage, but it allows us to go ahead and dump our trackables in there to get them out of our inventory. Well, geocaching.com with the last update went ahead and listened and they created a way to do that. They're calling trackable like a collectible. When you edit the trackable, you can say this trackable is collectible. And what that'll do is you can then move it to your collection as one of the options in the log. And what it does is you don't have a physical place that you can go and check all of the things that you have collected. You know, you can't see all of your collectibles in one area. I mean, you can go back to your profile page and look on, you know, what trackables you own, and it shows you having them in your possession, but it doesn't show them actually in your possession as far as inventory goes. Have you guys had, Montu, I don't know how many collectibles you collect. What do you actually, have you used this? Daryl, have you used it yet?
No, I haven't used it yet. I will admit this is the first I've heard about it, but I'm definitely going to check it out because we do have a rather extensive coin collection. Sorry, Dree's well got us outdone. We do have a good-sized collection that I do log into the events we attend to, but other than that, it's something I would love to have out of the way for when I'm just logging a regular cache, pick up a coin here and drop it there and not have to go through and hunt through the whole list just to find that particular coin to drop it off.
Yeah, we haven't activated most of the trackables in our collection. What we do have, though, are the name tags and some of the discovery only kind of things that really just clutter up our inventory. So that's where we used it, is just to get rid of that. But what I don't like is that collection doesn't have a nice, easy link where you can go and view them all.
Yeah, and one thing that I have had too that I kind of find an issue is you have to go through and actually edit each one of your trackable pages. And then like for me, that I have them in that unpublished cache, I have to pick them up, put them in my inventory, and then move them into my collection. So I don't really, it's interesting that you have to do that. Now, Dudley Grunt is saying that you don't actually have to enable the collection to add it to your own collection. I've not had a chance to play with that yet. I'm gonna have to go ahead and try it. He said that you don't have to click the "this item is collectible" to actually add them to your collection. So, Dudley, thanks for that tip. I'm gonna go ahead and check that out, which would mean that I don't need to edit all of my collectibles.
Yeah, I think I haven't had a chance to really play with it too much, but I believe that by marking it as collectible, it makes it something that other people cannot retrieve. I haven't had the chance to try that out, but that's kind of what it looked like when I was playing with it. The situation, though, that I ran into, and I'm wondering if this is just my one travel bug, but it seems like the travel bugs can't be marked or thrown into a collection. It's only for the coins and the custom icons.
Interesting. Now, I'm going to have to try that out, too. I want to play around with it a little bit more and see. You know, there's the wording on it to me is a little bit weird because they say this item is collectible. To me, collectible kind of means it can move around from cache to cache. It can be passed around as opposed to keep in my private collection. Maybe that's just me. Maybe I didn't, I don't know. Maybe I'm weird like that and didn't quite understand the actual working of that, the wording of it. But, you know, once I played around with it a little bit, I've added a few of them to my collection. I still have a handful of them that are still in my privately unpublished cache. So it's one of those things that I'll have to play around with and report a little bit more once we get more playing with it. It is good too, though, because what we were seeing is that a lot of people were creating these publicly, not public caches that were unpublished. And what it was doing is it was taking up a lot of the GC numbers. You know, we've had, and starting to get longer and longer GC numbers. And so because a lot of people were unpublishing caches that actually weren't published. And so it was taking up a lot of the GC numbers.
Now, Dudley Grunt in the chat room just said that he tried his vehicle travel bug as a test and it worked for him. So for some reason, I just have a traveler that doesn't want to work correctly. So I'll have to look into that and find out what's going on there.
Yeah, on this, that's actually one thing I've been using instead of this, because this came out a couple months ago. There's a program out there called Coin Logger Assistant, which, true, it still leaves all the coins in my collection, but it definitely helps me for getting the coins moved around when I do need to move it around. It's by a software company called GC Soft, which I discovered at the Pinellas Geo event several months back.
Now, one thing you did mention, Daryl, is the custom icons and, you know, the reason people are collecting icons. We are seeing a lot of new icons lately. You know, a couple years ago, we hardly ever saw new icons. It was only maybe if they had like a new icon type, like where I go, we'd see those. But now these days, we're seeing all sorts of new icons. We've got the 10-year event icon. We've got the Groundspeak cash icon. We've got the 10-year Groundspeak party icon. We've got all sorts of new icons. What do you guys think about that? I mean, I know that I'm kind of a icon collector. I love icons. You know, I've got a whole bunch of them and it's fun to get new ones. And I'm kind of actually disappointed when I activate a coin and it only has the generic icon. It doesn't have a custom icon. So what do you guys think of this new, getting a whole bunch of new icons?
Well, the icon creep that I think we're kind of talking about here is really in the caches, because that's where it's been more controlled. You know, we've always had just a few. You know, you had the virtuals, you had traditionals, you had multis, you know, events. Well, really, this seems like it started to grow when they started adding the mega caches to that. And then we had the 10 years, and now we've got the headquarter cache, and we've got the lost and found. You know, I like the different icons, but I can see a lot of people going to be upset because they can't get some of those icons too. You know, you have to go to Seattle to get a couple of these icons, and they're only going to be available for, you know, the one day.
Well, and I guess that makes it kind of more of a valuable thing. I mean, you know, where anyone can go ahead and get green little ammo can icon just by walking down the street and clicking, you know, looking under a lamp skirt. You know, the mega events are harder to get, you know, and even harder than that is the Project Ape cache, which we've had for a long time. And now we're just seeing a little bit more. To me, it's not that big of a deal. I like the icons, but again, I'm not going to get the 10-year Seattle event. I know you and the Bad Cop and several other people are going to get that one, and I'm envious of that. But, you know, I'm not going to get that one ever. I do have the 10-year event cache icon. So for me, it's one of those things that I don't necessarily mind seeing new icons. Now, if they do it willy-nilly and just start adding random icons for a random thing, then that's where it gets out of hand.
Yeah, the fact that this is all really around the 10-year anniversary kind of makes it more palatable. But if this were to happen more often and you only have one cache of a particular icon type, that I'm not sure that I really like so much.
Yeah, and you know, it's one of those things that I'm okay with it for the most part here. The 10-year events are kind of cool. Again, it's one of those things that you really have a hard time getting. You know, I remember when I first did a mega event, first went to a mega event, I was really pumped because I was like, hey, I actually get that mega icon that I've never had before. It's a new icon. You know, I can go down the street and get pretty much any other icon, but the mega event, that one, you know, is pretty rare. And same thing with the camera caches now are really hard to find. And the virtual caches with you, you know, those are getting more and more hard to find.
Yeah, and well, locationless is gone completely.
True.
So yeah, you can't hide you know, so many of these icon types either. And a lot of people really get into hiding every type of icon that's available. So there are some people who are going to be kind of, you know, displeased about that too.
Now, one of the things that I had an issue with this week, which I kind of, if you follow me on Twitter, XPunkX, you know, you've seen this from when I dealt with it earlier this week, but there was, I've got a cache that's on a long trail and I had it marked one for the terrain. But I did mark the attribute saying that it was a wheelchair, not a wheelchair friendly cache, because you have to go up this little tiny hill. And, you know, I know that Montu's wife Jodster wouldn't be able to get to it. So I thought about that and actually added the icon saying that you can't get to it if you are in a wheelchair. But I did leave it as a location one because that was when I created it. It was still the default one, you know, one was the default, but I had someone find it and said that, you know, this should not be a one cache. It should be a 1.5. Even Groundspeak say, you know, if it's a whatever, it should be 1.5. But it's one of those things, you know, what are the icon or the attributes actually for then? If I can't use an attribute saying it's a wheelchair, not wheelchair friendly, if I have to also then go ahead and do a terrain 1.5. I mean, to me, I don't know. I went ahead and actually did it. I bumped the terrain up, you know, just out of, you know, niceness, and especially since, you know, there are people who don't look at the attributes. But to me, what are the attributes for if you're not actually going to look at them? You know, I know you can filter them when you do your pocket queries, but if you're not actually going to look at them, what good is it?
Yeah, there I would have to agree with you, Andy. I know we've got one cache near me put out by a cacher named Swamp Muck. I don't have the GC number offhand, but it is out on a at a beach. And, of course, at beaches you normally have nice, deep sugar sand. And for those of us that are perfectly capable of moving on our legs, you're able to get to the cache, and it really is a one terrain. However, because of it being sugar sand, I don't care what kind of a wheelchair you got, it's going to dig in, and it can't make even the 10 feet to the cache from the sidewalk.
But again, it's, I mean, I don't know. I guess the terrain to me is more of a kind of a something that's user specific. I mean, yes, there are rating systems out there to use, and yes, you know, on the cache page it says when you're creating one, if you have difficulty with this, go through this quiz and see what gets rated. But that is, to me, is all user specific. I mean, I could say my cache is a 5.5, and in fact, I've been to a liar cache in Michigan where you know it's rated as a 5.5 cache, but it's clearly a walk down the road. Nowhere near a 5.5 cache, but yet it's labeled as a 5.5 cache. So to me, that says it's all user specific, and they can kind of label it whatever they feel their cache is. So to me, an icon saying yes, this is wheelchair accessible, no, it's not wheelchair accessible, holds more weight than a terrain rating that doesn't have an official, like, official weight rating to it.
Well, I think the big problem really is that the attribute icons aren't visible to most users. That's not something until recently that was transmitted with the GPX file, and most people doing paperless caching didn't see them. If you used any of the paperless on the GPSs, you didn't get any attributes. Most of the paperless on your PDAs or smartphones don't support attributes. So the only way that you'd actually see those icons is if you went to the geocaching.com webpage and looked at it there. And, you know, even when they had the printable PDFs, I don't think they were printing the attributes on those pages.
Well, but the thing is, you can filter your GPX files or your pocket queries based on the attributes. So you can say you don't want wheelchair accessible caches. You don't want, you know, and again, I'm sure that it's really frustrating, especially for Montu, you know, with his wife being in a wheelchair, going to a cache that you can't get to, and she's got to stay in the car because it's labeled as a 1-1, and you're thinking that, you know, so I understand that it should, you know, there maybe be higher, but again, there should be a standard. I mean, yes, there's, you know, it's up to yourself to create it.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying, but I think at the core is that the attribute system, at least as it had been until recently, doesn't work for much of anything.
Well, and
now, I'll personally, I go ahead, Andy.
Oh, I was just going to say, and even, you know, up until recently, Groundspeak really didn't even have an official stance on what it was, what was what on terrain anyways. So on the older caches, that doesn't really hold much weight.
Well, the only thing that they've had, and it's been this way as long as I've been a member, is that a 1 should be handicapped accessible. If it's not, or wheelchair accessible, sorry, not handicapped, because there is a difference. But if it's not wheelchair accessible, it has to be a 1.5 or better.
Now, I personally agree. I ran the quiz just for the fun of it on that one cache that I just mentioned, and it came up recommending it be a 1-1 cache because it is flat and level ground, you know, yet sugar sand, you know, nice beach sand. But it even recommended that the cache should be a terrain of 1. And with it being just 10 foot off of a paved sidewalk and right by a covered pavilion, you know, it's kind of hard to really judge it. Yes, he does have it. The icon is set. The attribute is set for not wheelchair accessible. So he does have it covered that way. So Jodster and I didn't have any surprises when we went out there. Plus, of course, he says right in the description, it's on the beach. So we knew, knowing Florida's beaches, that this was one where I was going to help her, and we still managed to get the cache together between her and Princess Katiebug and Shinigami 03. We found the cache and signed the login. Off we went.
Well, guys, this is going to wrap up our show today. If you've got any feedback about this or any other topic, as you can see, this is kind of a hot topic, at least for me. Give us a call, 206-3503-GPS, and leave us a voicemail. You know, it's one of those things that I would love to have an official Groundspeak thing that would get an official type of a rating for the quiz. You know, like you said, that's a 1-1 cache according to the rating system. So, you know, give us a call, 206-3503-GPS. We want to thank you for subscribing to the Geocaching Podcast. We want to thank Lisa from Cache Advance for making this episode of the podcast available to you guys. And join us each Tuesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern on the TalkShoe service. You can call in live at 724-444-7444. Our TalkCast ID is 7525. Our show notes and links to all of our past shows can be found at geocachingpodcast.com. You can call our voicemail line at 206-3503-GPS anytime to leave us a voicemail. Have a safe week and happy caching.